there's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Before the break, we spoke with Frank Daly, whose father wrote evocatively about what Europe was like as the Nazis rose to power in Germany in the 1930s. As they were getting older, writers Rachel Kadish and Jessica Shattuck learned about that period from their grandparents, but they heard two somewhat different stories.
Kadish's grandparents were Jews that survived the Holocaust, fleeing from their home in Poland and hiding for much of the war. Shattuck's grandparents were members of the Nazi Party in Germany. Family history has influenced each of their writing, and it has, interestingly, brought the two writers together.
They wrote about processing their family's pasts in a recent conversational essay on the website Salon. And they join us on the line this morning, Kadish on Skype and Shattuck on the phone. Welcome to you both.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
I think we need to start by having you explain how you discovered this shared but very different background. Either one of you, kind of walk us through how the revelation came about.
Well, we're in the same writers group in the Boston area, and we get together about once a month to discuss our work and navigating the world of publishing and writing. And I didn't know Jessica before we were in the group together, but it became clear from the subjects we were writing about that part of her family was from Germany, that my family were Jewish Holocaust survivors from Poland. And as more of this started to emerge, I thought, well, let's talk about this, because it's one of these things where if you don't talk about it, it just sits there. And so, Jessica, what happened? We went out to coffee. Right. And we started talking about it. There was so much to say.
Yeah, I would say it was the catalyst was that I wrote an op-ed in The Times about the fact that my grandparents had been Nazis, because it wasn't really something that I, until I wrote that op-ed, it wasn't something I was kind of wearing on my sleeve either. We knew of our respective backgrounds, but that sort of put a finer point on it. And Rachel reached out to me and said, I'd love to talk about this and, you know, see if we have something we'd want to write together or just feel out. It would be really interesting to talk about this, you know, connection we have. And so we did. And it felt like once we started talking, I could have talked for hours.
So it started out. Did it feel awkward when it started out?
Not so much. I mean, I think that so much, we were both coming at this with so much on the table and in a very open and honest way. So while I think that anytime you're talking about such a difficult subject as the Holocaust and as what it means to have had, grandparents who were Nazis or who were Holocaust survivors, obviously two completely different experiences, but things that you approach with sensitivity. But at the same time, when you're coming at this with a sort of open point of view and a trust in the person you're talking with, I didn't find it terribly awkward. I found it actually quite freeing.
Yeah. And I think part of it, if I can say, and Jessica, you know, jump in if I'm getting this wrong, but I think we come, we phrase it differently. We come from similar points of view here, which is, first of all, our conversation here has nothing to do with forgiveness. You know, Jessica didn't do anything. And, you know, and I am not the person who would have the power for forgiveness. You know, these are my grandparents we're talking about. So what we're after isn't about forgiveness. And I think it's not even about guilt. I think it's about responsibility. It's what do we do with this moving forward? And also, I think something I feel really strongly about is, you know, when you grow up with this legacy in your family, you're aware of how unsafe the world can be. And people find safety in different things. For me, I think that what makes the world safer is people actively trying to imagine each other's lives. So we're not strangers to each other in that way, and we can empathize with each other. So I genuinely want to understand the experiences of somebody whose family was on the other side of this.
Right. So, Rachel, you grew up with that mentality in your background. But Jessica, where did World War II and the Holocaust fall in the family histories you grew up with and how that period of time was treated in your own family dynamic?
Yeah, it was sort of an evolving. I had an evolving relationship with it. I would say that as a kid, I grew up going to visit my grandparents in Germany, and I loved going to the farm that my mother had grown up on, and I loved my grandparents. But I also was aware, even as a very young child, of the shame of being German. I think my mother had transmitted to me that Germany had done horrible things during the war, I don't remember having a totally clear picture as a really little girl of what the Holocaust was, but I knew that there were terrible things and that the Germans were responsible. So that was kind of on the table from the start with regards to my mother, who was American. She had moved to America when she was 19 and never moved back to Germany. With my grandparents, however, we didn't really talk about the war. We talked a lot about, I talked with my grandmother especially, about after the war. And I heard so many stories of my mother's childhood and of my mother, of my grandmother's time after the war, how poor they were. So as I got older, I started to think more and more about why was it this way and what exactly, you know, let's talk more about the war. And what was really interesting was that once I started to ask my grandmother questions, she actually really wanted to talk about the war and she wanted to talk about the Holocaust and she wanted to try to explain how she could have been enamored of the Nazi movement and Hitler in the beginning. And I think in a way that's a kind of unique experience because many Germans of her generation were not at all open to that subject. But I will say that I speak to so many Germans of my generation and say, have you talked to your, you know, grandparents about what they did in the war? Did you ever talk about that? Oh, no, we never talked about that. And then I'd say, well, did you ever ask them? Oh, well, no, I knew it was better not to. So it's interesting. I think that sometimes a little asking goes a long way.
Well, and do you think if you hadn't had those conversations, if you hadn't asked, then guilt and shame would be much more front and center for you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it still has been a pretty front and center part of my life, and I've tried to channel that in positive ways in terms of trying to understand, trying to know that time period more and really have a deeper understanding of it and try to reckon with it. So I think that it's true. These conversations put me in the position to do that as opposed to sort of, you know, doing my own sweeping under the carpet. I guess that's true.
I was going to say, you both touch on some really interesting emotions in this, you know, sort of on the record conversation in Salon. And you talk about the taboos you go up against in your writing. For example, the idea of portraying members of the Nazi Party as nuanced characters who are perhaps not the 100% evil that we'd imagine. And I have to say, as a reader, when I encounter that kind of nuanced portrayal, it makes me a little itchy. But maybe that's the point, right?
Well, that was something that I struggled with a lot in writing this and that Rachel and I have talked about, but I felt like it was my job to try to create characters who were real human beings, who were rounded and who could demonstrate kindness as well as indifference and demonstrate love as well as hate. To me, if we are going to honor the promise of never again, which I feel is part of my responsibility as a German-American, we need to try to understand how it happened the first time so that we can avoid that. And I guess I don't think that you can do that without looking at many Nazis, at least these in this middle area, as real human beings who you can even empathize with at times. And but I recognized as I was writing this that this is a really tricky thing to do and that there are also many strong arguments to be made for not humanizing people who dehumanized so many people for so long.
I mean, I think it's so important to humanize. And I think one of the things that's really important to distinguish is that understanding never has to mean approval. If we understand somebody, it doesn't mean we condone what they do. It means we understand how they came to do it. And I mean, I don't want to make too grand a claim for art here, but maybe I'll go ahead and do it anyway. One of the things that I think keeps us safer in the world is being able to understand how bad things actually happen, how people can justify to themselves either doing these horrendous things or sitting by and knowing that they're being done, but sort of letting themselves not know. If we don't understand that, if we just say, well, there are evil people and they're from planet evil and they aren't built anything like us, and you know they have a big E for evil on their forehead, then that's fine, but then we're not going to recognize how these things can happen the next time around. We're not going to understand the nuances and gradations of how people can let themselves be bystanders or accomplices to something like this. And that leaves us vulnerable to not understanding the world around us and being in danger of having things happen again. So I feel like this moral imperative toward nuance, toward saying, yes, real people did this. And let's look at that. Let's see what that's like.
Well, right. And of course, we're not having this conversation in a vacuum. These are the kinds of issues, you know, the rise of nationalism in a lot of places. These kinds of questions are surfacing all over today.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Well, I would say that one thing to add to what Rachel was just saying is that sense of, if you look at anyone who's done something terrible as simply a monster, it totally distances them from yourself. If we start to see the humanity crack through, as well as the monstrous actions, then it challenges you to a deeper understanding of yourself and your own potential. And I think it spurs us to a greater, we hold ourselves to a higher standard of cross-examining our own narratives and making sure that we really know what we're getting into or what we're doing, thinking about how our actions affect others.
One of the things that you're also hearing is how impassioned both of us are about this conversation, because it's so important, I think, to both of us. One of the things that Jessica and I ran up against in our conversation was also this question of power and powerlessness. And I think, to me, this is of a piece with really being able to look at individual responsibility and how we can let ourselves be passive or active. And one of the things I take from my family's experience during World War II, when they were on the run, when they were in hiding, is that there is nothing more powerful than the individual in moments when the world is going haywire. And one thing I always think about is, if you think about a person who survived the Holocaust, let's say in hiding, there had to have been, you know, 30, 40, 50 people all doing the right thing in order for that person to survive. Because it's not just the farmer who hid that person in their barn. It was the people who noticed that maybe some extra medicine or food was being delivered to the barn, and they chose not to say anything. You know, it's all those people who chose to avert their eyes, and you needed all of those people to do the right thing in order for just that one person to survive. Whereas in order to betray that one person, it took only one person to do that. And so when I think of it that way, I think how powerful we are as individuals. And that really helps me in moments where it's tempting to think, oh, we're all so powerless. What can one person do?
Was it energizing to be able to take this conversation that first played out in a coffee shop with each other and be able to share it with the world?
Yeah, yes. I think we both had the sense as we were talking about it, like there was this sense that our own personal sense that we had so much to say was related to the feeling that there was so much to talk about. And so the idea of starting to open that conversation up, and I think both of us have heard back from different people who've said, wow, I really was interested in reading what you wrote or hearing you on the radio talking about these subjects because I'm thinking about my grandfather in World War II or my, you know, and people kind of responding in their own way and wanting to carry that conversation out themselves. I like to think of this conversation as a little bit of a sort of a trail of breadcrumbs that's going to spread out into the world, or for lack of a better metaphor.
That's a nice way to put it. Do you remember, Jessica, when we were sitting in that cafe and I felt there was almost this physical presence we were invoking of our mothers and grandmothers, because we had this exchange where we said, would our grandmothers have been able to sit at this table? What if they'd been here, our grandmothers or our mothers, listening to us have this conversation? Would they have been able to stay at the table? And I felt almost this sense of carrying all that on our shoulders when we were speaking. And then as we've widened out the conversation, I feel like, oh, it's not only our own grandparents who are clustered around that table, sort of, you know, metaphorically eavesdropping to see what kind of conversation we can have now. It's the ghosts and legacies of a lot of other people's experiences. And it's been really fascinating to hear from other people.
Yeah. And I think that in that same moment, we were sort of thinking, wow, this is actually, maybe we are the first generation that can really do this, because it was really hard to imagine how our grandparents certainly would have come together on this. There's just so much pain and suffering, and it just was literally almost unimaginable. And then I think our parents, it was sort of, there was a beginning, but there was still so much callous around these subjects that it was hard to kind of picture that. And I feel like we're maybe at a point in time today where not only does it feel totally relevant to political happenings in the world today, but it also feels like we're a generation that has enough remove that we can stir the pot.
I'm grateful that we were able to eavesdrop for a few minutes on the conversation, and hopefully it will spur many conversations in this part of the world as well. Rachel Kadish and Jessica Shattuck, thank you both so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Rachel Kadish's latest novel is called The Weight of Ink. Jessica Shattuck's latest is The Women in the Castle. You can find a link to their conversation transcribed in Salon at WUWM.com, and we reached them in Boston.
You're really swell, I have to admit you deserve expressions that really...